started recording, and before we get on to anything, the title, we both know what the title of this video is going to be, so I don't want it to be clickbaity, so I want us to address that first, which is, this is likely to be the last Freebooters on YouTube, and I've recently been giving a lot of thought to stopping posting on YouTube altogether.
Mm-hmm.
For quite a lot of reasons. So if you're watching this, that doesn't mean I want to stop making content, and we're not going to stop making content. So the TLDR is, check out my website for all the stuff that I'm posting on general. That'll include the Discord room, that'll include the PeerTube Fediverse stuff that we're doing, any live stream we're doing, all that kind of stuff. If you want to like a catch-all for all of the stuff that I'm doing, chrisware.wales, that's the place to go and get it. But I think, I mean, it's been like a big thing on my mind lately, that maybe that I want to sort of stop YouTube, if not for a while, then maybe indefinitely, for a lot of reasons. But the one that kicked it into serious thought, which feels is a little bit like the straw that broke the camel's back, is that they scrapped their they quietly removed gender identity from their hate speech policy. Mm. Are you aware of this, Drew?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. They've done a lot of shitty stuff over the years. Also, another thing that's kind of getting in my craw. We've had this one about craws before, haven't we?
Craws, right. I think I said something wrong. And I was like, that doesn't sound right. And
it's stuck in my craw.
Yeah.
Is that they're just getting so aggressive with the anti-ad blocker stuff. And pushing adverts on people, and it's just making me feel like I don't belong on YouTube anymore.
Something that this is just, yeah, and it's not that. So something hit you the other day, where you just get was it you kept getting told you can't view this video because you're using an ad blocker.
That's the one, yeah.
That's the one, yeah. And I think it was just you got unlucky on some A/B testing coin flip or something. And it just kept getting it. I've not had it at all, but you kept getting it.
I've worked out the formula to get it to work now, but it's a pain in the ballsack.
I'll say that in case anybody else is having it.
So I use uBlock Origin and I use Firefox, and what I do is it's still, and I use a user agent. What's the add-on? It changes your user agent. It's like the main one that I think Mozilla recommends. So I set my user agent to be the latest version of Chrome on Windows, and then I have to clear all the cookies on both YouTube.com and Google.com. And you kind of have to do them either simultaneously or both at the same time, or do it in incognito mode. Or something. Like the cookies have to be like blank.
Purged,
and then every now and then it will get wise to it. And then I'll have to wipe the cookies, re-log in again.
Yeah. Which does seem like it is, something weird stuff. And it's not like that happened and you were just personally pissed off at YouTube and want to withdraw from it from that reason. That comes into it, but it's indicative of a path they're going down, which it's the path they've always been going down, but it sort of shows how close they're getting to, how close they're getting to a site that I won't use.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it throws all the other stuff I've been thinking about for a long time in perspective. Like, you know, we're big, small internet people. Okay, that's a weird turn of phrase. We like the more punky side of the internet. And I think a lot of people who've been watching my videos for a long time are also that. And I think that a lot of people who've been watching my videos over the years don't actually watch YouTube anymore. Like, my views have been steadily going down for years now, which is kind of fine. But then the difference between my views on YouTube and then my views on PeerTube are kind of at the point now where I'd rather just be all in on PeerTube.
It's in the order of, it's still higher on YouTube for sure, but it's in the order of hundreds on both now.
Yes.
At which point, if it's in the same order.
Yeah. And also, like, I want to put my time into PeerTube because the, and it's not necessarily just PeerTube. I've been playing around with the RSS feeds on PeerTube a little bit. And I've actually kind of found out an interesting fun fact today is, I don't know if you checked this in the, I think I posted this in the Space Virgins, our private chat, that Space Virgins is actually listed on podcast indexes.
You see that? That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's picking up PeerTube instances.
So, I keep thinking, like, the Linux content that I enjoy nowadays is actually Linux podcasts. It's Destination Linux and Late Night Linux. And that's basically it. And I think they're really good. I think they do have a YouTube presence, but I listen to them on my phone when I've got a spare moment. And they are... like, podcasting is kind of like the most mainstream form of like federated, decentralized content you can get.
Well, this is something that came up when we were talking. It is that, but I think I've seen numbers for this, but if not, I'd be amazed otherwise. Like, the overwhelming majority of people must access podcasts through Apple, whatever their thing is called, the Apple Play, I think.
iTunes.
And Spotify. iTunes, yeah. So iTunes, Spotify, and then YouTube, I would imagine, as a distant third. Like, that must be how most people, and I think a lot of people think of them as now. Because when podcasts started, I think they were very much just like sort of community radio. You know what I mean? Like, nothing got a huge audience for a while. And it was just people making, it was like the old web. It's people just making podcasts about stuff they were interested in, you know, for the few people who would be interested in listening to that, and now it has become something, you know. You got, what's his name, is it Josh Rogan or Joe Rogan?
Joe Rogan, you're thinking of the Curry. Yeah. Rogan Josh.
Okay, right. Which is good. Curry.
Yeah, it's good curry.
We should do a Curry's tier list.
Yeah, oh, we should, shouldn't we? Yeah. I would put that, oh, that's quite a good one. It's been a while since I had a Rogan Josh. I think I need to do some research.
Actually, no, a Curry's tier list would be pointless because there'd be a lot in A and then a few in S. There's no bad curries.
No, I can't.
I have controversial opinions about korma, but that's as far as we go.
Korma's quite coconutty, right?
Yeah, it's the creamy. Yeah. It's not spicy at all, really. It's creamy, sweet. I fucking love it. And I think people, you know, especially macho, it's got to be spicy, kind of, you know, Tinderloo people are like korma. Oh. But no, I love a korma.
What about vindaloo? Where would we put that?
I love vindaloo. Absolutely love. I think Tinderloo is too far. That's like, you're not tasting anything at that point. You're just having pain. But yeah, love a vindaloo, yeah.
It's been a long time since I had a vindaloo. Madras can sometimes be a bit spicy too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. When you talk about the spiciness of curries, it depends where you go. They can fucking vary.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I gotta be honest, I don't eat a lot of curries these days. But also, one thing about curries in the UK that I do quite like, great for vegan options.
Yeah. I mean, it's Indian culture has a history of like vegetarianism and veganism, so you know it's going to naturally lean that way, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And be tasty with it. Like, I'm a meat eater and I enjoy meat. I shouldn't be. I think it's morally indefensible at this point, but I am. But yeah, with curry, quite happy with a vegetable curry. Like, I don't care about the meat at all.
Yeah, and that's one of the things when I'm cooking for Rosie quite a lot is we'll get like just whatever veg is in season or about on the supermarket, and then we'll spice it up. And we'll just, spices is basically the mechanism we use to make vegetables interesting. And it's kind of a winner.
I think starchy or like potatoes and cauliflower and stuff like that, that works well as the chunky thing in a curry.
Yeah. Potatoes is great. There's a freezer in the local co-op. I think it's called like Cook, where they have like fancy microwave meals that are like pretty close to restaurant quality, really. And they do gunpowder potatoes, which is like potatoes that are cooked up in like a Madrasi powder, a little bit of a mustard flavor to them, and they are just so good. And I have semi managed to recreate them at home, Like, it's still working out the spices. And, like, you don't always have the spices in your cupboard. And finding, like, a Madras powder is kind of difficult in standard supermarkets and stuff. But we get we get a ballpark kind of thing for it.
Dad used to cook a curry every Saturday night. And he would just sort of, he started off following recipes. And then after a couple of years, just started freestyling and sort of making up his own curries. And it was great.
Yeah. Someone asked me for recipes for a party they were cooking yesterday. And I completely went blank because, like, I don't really do. I see what's in the cupboard and I see what goes. And it's all about matching up the flavor profile, you know, like you want a bit of, you know, maybe you've got something sweet, then maybe you want something a bit like vinegary to sort of slice across you know, it's just
my family on my mom's side seems to have a genetic predisposition to vinegar. Like we like very vinegary things.
I like quite vinegary things, so I love pickled stuff.
My sister, she's probably the worst. At one point, she was drinking vinegar.
Oh, wow.
Just for enjoyment, not because I think some people do it as a quack health thing, but no, just for enjoyment. And when she was a kid, on a Sunday dinner, she would have vinegar instead of gravy. And when I say vinegar instead of gravy, like vinegar this deep in the plate.
Oh.
Like everything sitting in vinegar.
I mean, that's not that crazy to me. There are going to be British people that sort of are emailing in now, aren't they? It's like, what?
Unusual, I would say. Maybe not crazy. Yeah, because you started off with the mint sauce, because the mint sauce is very, it's vinegar-based.
Yeah, I like mint sauce for my roast dinner.
I don't like mint sauce, but she started off with the mint sauce, and then she realized what she really liked was the vinegar part, so she just skipped the mint and just, straight to vinegar.
Ah, but mint sauce also has a bit of sugar in it.
It does. Yeah, she wasn't bothered about that either. She just wanted the vinegar. And, if I want to make my mouth water, I just need to think about pickled onions.
Oh, I love pickled onions.
Just immediately salivating. I'm salivating.
Oh, yeah, every now and then I will get... One of the great things about being vegan is that you're very easy for people to buy gifts for, because they just buy you, like, vegan-y snacks. It's like, it's a winner.
Yeah.
And every now and then I will get just a jar of, like, quite fancy, usually, pickled onions from one of those, like, gift shops. And, they're fucking great. Like,
another thing my dad used to do, so he used to grow shallots himself and then pickle them in, like, I think wine vinegar, and he'd stick some lemongrass and chilies in there, and they're fucking delicious. Just like, add a little bit of a lemongrass flavor, a little bit of a chili zing to them, and like, beautiful.
My sister has bought these, like, they're like powdered chilies that are like perforated and dried. And you put them into pickled onions, and they infuse the pickled onions with a Scotch bonnet. It is, so it's like, it's serious stuff, and it kind of blows your head off, but like, you still want to do it.
I'm on very cheap pickled onions now, but for, you know, poverty reasons. And when I open a jar, I throw in a handful of like black peppercorns. And put the lid back on, shake it up, just like in it. Yeah, over the week it takes me to consume the pickled onions, it's like it gets more peppery. It's nice.
Honestly, most of the time, day in day out, I get the cheapest pickled onions on the shelves too.
Pickled onions, I do think the expensive ones are nicer.
Yeah, but they're not proportional to the cost.
Well, I think I disagree, but I can't afford them. So what I should really do is, when I'm a bit more up to it, is just pick home pickle. Like, it's not hard.
You could, I mean, you've got a bit of a garden there. If you can get your anxiety into the thing, you can grow your own pickled onions.
That's the name, actually. I want to get myself to where I can be in the garden for a few hours at a time, and then start, like, just the bait, just potatoes, onions, maybe tomatoes. Not for me. I'm not a fan of tomatoes, but... Yeah, potatoes and onions. Yeah, beautiful.
I'll tell you what, Brussels sprouts, homegrown, excellent.
I am one of those people. Brussels sprouts, do not understand how somebody can eat that. That is, like, actually, I think it's one of those genetic things where you taste things differently, right? Because to me,
kind of, but I used to hate them.
It tastes like super amplified earwax.
I don't know what earwax tastes like.
You don't remember as a kid, like, you'd be doing this and then you'd put your finger in your mouth and, like,
I was a bit squeamish about body stuff when I was a kid. It's
it takes a bit of work. It's
I did not like vegetables as much until I went vegetarian, and then suddenly they start. I swear, they started becoming tastier. I think your palate changed.
I can understand that. It's like with tea for me, when you know I used to have sugar and you just wean yourself off it, and now just black tea tastes very sweet to me. Like I can taste sweetness in there.
Yeah, and this is going to sound like this sounds like I'm selling a lie, but I'm not. But my parents and I, we were planning somewhere nice to go for dinner in May, and there's this lovely old pub up the road. It's quite well known for its food, and they I think they went there for a lunchtime thing, just them, and they asked about vegan options, and they were like, we'll do what we can, but like generally when you're talking about Sunday dinner options, they're like, but we can easily do like a roast potatoes and vegetables. And they were sort of like quite apologetic about that apparently, but like, you know what, I'm fine.
Me and my sister have this conversation fairly frequently, like for anything kind of, I was gonna add, like, the curry conversation reinforces for me the fact that stew is the best food in the world. And I would count, like, curry is a kind of stew. You know, you got your traditional stews. Most of the Italian food that we get is a stew of some sort. Like, just stew is the broadest and best category of food. But yeah, my sister and I are often, like, for things like, you know, like lasagna, chili, bolognese, Sunday dinner, we're perfectly happy. Curry, we're perfectly happy without the meat. Like, I enjoy the meat on a Sunday dinner, but I can absolutely, it is, if you take the meat away, you're reducing my enjoyment by 1%.
I've been cooking a couple of chilies lately, chili con carnes, and I've been trying, like, beans, you know, but that's one where you can sort of fill in a lot with beans, and it's been an absolute success. But I have discovered a couple of secret ingredients that tend to make things like chili and tomatoey sauce things just a little bit excellent. The first is you can get red wine stocks. I can't remember the name of the brand. It's quite a well-known brand. I'll look it up. But like, but it's like these little jelly stock things. It's not that red wine stock. Is it Nor?
I know what you mean by that, you know, the jelly stocks. Yeah, so it's just that with red wine in, I guess.
So the little jelly stocks, they're red wine stuff, and they just add a wonderful little zing. You can get plant-based OXO cubes now, like even the beef stock ones. You can get what else do I use? Oh, a scoop of Marmite. That just
absolutely, yeah.
A little scoop of Marmite.
Yep.
And similar to Marmite, but like a chili fermented chili paste equivalent, gochujang. That's wonderful as well, like a spoonful of that in a sauce. That's great. And what's the one I'm thinking of? Oftentimes a cube of dark chocolate, just melt that into the sauce.
I remember when chili and chocolate became a thing, like a combo that works. It became known as a combo that works. And I've had like chocolate with chili, and I've had chili with chocolate in it, and I get it, but I don't enjoy it. It's not a combo I enjoy. I see how it makes sense, but it's not for me.
Well, the single, just a square of it in like a chili con carne or a bolognese sauce, like you don't taste it. It's stealth sin.
I can. That's the problem. I taste it. I don't taste the blend. I taste the chili plus chocolate.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I love chocolate. I love chili. Don't like. There's a lot of things where I like both things, but I don't like them together.
Oh yeah, no. That's is that possibly also an autistic thing?
Could well be, couldn't it?
I don't,
with,
I mean,
with the red wine thing, I think any time you're making anything that's saucy and tomato based, like a chili or and basically any Italian food, I adhere to there's a bit in The Godfather, the first Godfather film, where one of the big gangsters is teaching Michael how to cook, because it's very brief, and he's just like, you throw in your onions, you throw in your sausage, you throw in your tomatoes, and then of course, you know, a couple of glugs of red wine. And I think that's the, you can turn anything from okay to really good just with a couple of glasses or whatever of red wine in any tomato based thingy, and it elevates it, I think.
Yeah. So,
and it can be the absolute cheapest, shittiest red wine, like it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and there's a lot of tricks for that kind of stuff cooking on a budget. Also, what I have been acquainting myself with is an air fryer. Those things are as good as they say. Like, I wrote them off for the longest time because they come across as such a trend item. Like, you know, bread makers that come into style.
Like it comes across like a Shopping Channel thing.
Yes, yeah,
like
yeah.
Like a bullshit, like a, what's the thing where there's like a plastic thing you can get that allows you to microwave bacon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It does nothing. You just get shitty microwave bacon. But yeah, yeah, it comes across like those, but no, they're real, yeah.
Mm. So what I often do with them, I mean, we've got a big Ninja and we've got a two small half mini Ninjas. And we often just cook a whole meal amongst those two air fryers with three trays. But often if we want to do just something nice with veg, like roast veg, we'll just either boil it a little bit or microwave a little bit and then slam it in the air fryer for a max crisp 10 minutes. And that's just a quick and easy way to roast it. Then you can throw it into other things because you've roasted it. You've, you know, unlocked all the sweetness and nuttiness in a lot of the veg. Particularly good with cauliflower as well, because if you're putting cauliflower into a curry and you've crisped up the edges, it just makes it a little bit more meatier.
What I wonder is how did it take us so long to get air fryers? It's not like a microwave where it's actually advanced technology. It's just heat and air.
Yeah, it's a hairdryer and a bucket.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, as well, is like people who have like grown up. The older someone is, the harder they are. Like the more entrenched they are in their way of cooking, with the exceptions, of course. But a lot of I don't know. Maybe I'm generalizing a little bit there. But I think a lot of people, once they're into the habit of the oven and the
I think my mum's generation took to air fryers basically instantly.
Oh really?
I think it passed among like the mum's network. And my mum really like she got an air fryer and then you know a lot of what was grilled or baked before was air fried because it's better.
Yeah, I haven't done a jacket potato in it, but I reckon if you do stick a potato in the microwave, do the insides, and then crisp it up in the air fryer.
Oh, crisp it up, yeah, for sure, yeah. Because I do think a jacket potato, baked potato, benefits from slow, cooked very slowly. But the thing is, with baked potatoes, you can't beat a baked potato done in an actual fire. You know, the old embers of a fire on. You have to remember, like, bonfire night is an actual thing before Halloween. So it took, on the bonfire towards the end of the evening, the embers, just wrap potatoes in foil, stick some butter in there or whatever, just stick it in the embers, cover it over, come back, like, I don't know, like an hour later or something, like, fucking amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I was lucky enough to live growing up in a house with an actual real fireplace. I would do all kinds of stuff. Probably not that hygienic. I would stick bread just on the fire.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, bread on an actual fire. Mm.
Yeah. When we first moved in here, actually, it still had open fires, and I'd always seen on TV in like old films they toast on a fire with a toasting fork. So you know, I asked my mum if we could do that, just like a normal fork with a piece of bread on it, just toasting it. But it's fucking great, yeah.
Awesome. Oh, we've tangented a fair bit actually.
We got from Joe Rogan.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! You were going to say something about Joe Rogan.
Yeah, so I just kind of think like podcasts have kind of become co-opted. They've become a commercialized thing now, which is a little bit they're still cool podcasts and they're still accessible in that federated way. But it's a shame that even podcasts have been kind of captured. Really,
I think that's the sad truth of just the world and people, though, isn't it?
Living in this world.
Yeah, is the to me, I always think of Joe Rogan as like the Homer Simpson of the real world. Like, he's kind of like the everyman that got shot up into a weird place.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
He is the stereotypical American, and I think that's probably why he's so successful.
And the reason this show works, his style, his interviewing style, just to be amazed by everything the guest says. Like literally, I've not seen, I'm only vaguely aware of him. I've seen clips and stuff, But I think I saw it when Sanders was on, and when Sanders on, he's like, "Oh, I've never thought of it that way before. That's amazing." Yeah, and he endorsed Sanders, didn't he, in 2016? Yeah, it's, "Oh God, that's amazing. Yeah, you're so right." And then the next week he can have like an actual fascist on and go be like, "Oh, that's amazing. I've never thought of it that way. You're absolutely right." You know, he's just he's President Man from Expanse. Like, yes. The last thing he heard is what he thinks.
Homer Simpson crossed for President Man. Yeah.
I know a lot of the liberals will sort of sneer at Rogan, Josh. That's not right, Joe Rogan. They'll sort of sneer at him, and he's just the everyman of the day. There's always an everyman of the day. He leans right because the left isn't making a good fucking case at the moment.
Yeah, but also the people that sneer at him, they are the kind of like Democrats that people don't like.
Exactly. Yeah, but they don't know that.
Yeah,
they don't understand that.
Yeah.
They think all the people that count like them.
Yes, but
don't like the people who don't like them. So it's they're fucked both ways.
Exactly. That's kind of how you lose elections, really. Like,
It's
all well and good when you're running a PTA or children's playgroup or whatever, but like when you're trying to like have some sort of national discourse about anything.
God, that's exactly what it is, isn't it? It's PTA. It's it's that type of person. It's PTA, and in a PTA they can just bully everybody. Yeah, it's exactly that.
But I mean, it's not like YouTube hasn't been. I mean, like, we look at, we think of Rogan Josh, I guess we'll call him that now, think of podcasts. But also, like, is it really a podcast? Because it's all video, isn't it? It's a Spotify television show.
That's something that I've sort of recently become aware of. Tim Heidecker. Of Tim and Eric fame, which was something I wasn't aware of. But yeah, I've been watching his On Cinema stuff, and I watched a few interviews with him. And that's what he says every time he's on a podcast. He's just like, "How is this not a TV show? This is just a TV show." And the host is always like, "Yeah, I guess so." Like, it's not something that sits well with them. But they're like, "Yeah, no, it is really. It's just an interview show." It's,
I mean, I'd be just as happy doing this as an audio podcast if there was. And you can do that on PeerTube as well. You can just like download the audio only, and that's kind of fine.
With podcasty stuff, I used to lean towards preferring just the audio, but now I think I'd like to see the faces talking. I'm happy with either, and I'm mainly not looking at it anyway. I'm doing something else when I'm doing a podcast, but it's nice, something nice about having the faces.
Yeah. Well, the thing I like about podcasts or podcast style content is that it's chatty. And I think again, this might be a little bit why I've fallen out of love with YouTube, because how many times have we seen the comment on YouTube, "Oh my God, 3 hours just to put web browsers in a tier list." And it's like, "Oh my God, you didn't go to a tier list video expecting informational content. Like, come on." Like,
yeah.
And I think that like what the type of stuff I want to make is not the type of stuff that YouTube wants to have.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. I can't find the video, but I watched a video just sort of dissecting this recently about how YouTube used to be a replacement for TV that was more sort of, this word has got problems, but authentic. It was just people making stuff that they cared about in a very lo-fi kind of way. And it was a more accessible TV. It was a TV that you could make. It was a TV that you could watch. You know, when you watched it felt like people like you talking about, it was a very sort of democratized TV. And over time, it just became TV.
Yeah.
With all the problems of TV. It's, production companies, it's limited viewpoints, all that stuff. Eventually, over time, it just became that. Or the mainstream of YouTube at least became that. And that's the problem, fundamentally. It just always, when it's commercializable, that's going to happen.
Yeah. Actually, that's an interesting part, because I've talked about this a little bit on the Fedi, and a lot of people have been throwing their thoughts my way. And one of the things that always comes up when we talk about this kind of thing is making a living off YouTube and things like that, and the idea that exposure is the most important thing and all this kind of stuff. Now, it's been a long time since I even monetized my channel, but even when I was, I wasn't making that much money. Like when we talk about professional YouTube, like there are tiers of professional YouTuber. A lot of the professional YouTubers, they're only just scraping by. Like, they're probably many of them are probably earning like less than minimum wage and get blindsided by the whatever ad apocalypse seems to happen. I was thinking about this just as I was getting ready for the show. It's like, if you're good enough at making, you know, online content that you could be considered close to a professional YouTuber, there is almost certainly like a better job for you out there in like social media for a non-profit or for at least a decent company or something rather than having to, part of
the problem is, I think a lot of things, I mean, it's difficult because we're socialists. So I'm certainly a socialist. Like, I want people to just have a decent standard of living no matter what they're doing.
Mm.
And then the video should just be a hobby.
Mm.
And then they can just continue making them with love and not have to think about the algorithm and so on. And also keep them lo-fi, because I think there's, as you sort of start to see it as you're living, there's a push to professionalize it. You know, you buy better cameras, you buy sound gear, you know, you get maybe a production person in, and you know, that kind of thing, or even get a production company. And that always ruins it. That always ruins the thing. Usually, some things survive that and become just like old, you know, TV shows. I forgot my point.
Keeping it lo-fi?
What do we start this with? It was something else. you talked about the job. I wanted to get into it. So for me, the model I like, I don't like Patreon itself. I don't think it should be private, and I don't think it should be profit-making, but that model... Because the nice thing about if you're making your money on Patreon, you're not tied to YouTube anymore.
Mm.
There's a little bit of tie because, you know, you need those views to get the patrons and that. But you can switch platforms if you're making the bulk of your money from Patreon. So I like that. And also, it should be... Patreon should just... I don't think you should lock content behind Patreon. Mm. I think it should be you have a Patreon as a sort of like for people who want to support what you're doing. And then all of your stuff is free. That's the model I like. Mm. And if you're doing Patreon, don't have fucking adverts. Because it it's a way to bring you up from adverts. Yeah, so that model I like.
Yeah.
Democratic patronage plus allowing the person then to be a bit more mobile.
Yeah, under the dictatorship of Chris, I would almost consider having ads on something that you're paying for to be like double jeopardy. Like, have one or the other, not allowed both. That's like...
I mean, if you're Emperor, would you not just ban ads?
They would be tempting, possibly. It might happen. But I would ban a lot of types of ads. First of all, no ads to children. Children, no advertising to children.
Yeah.
That's a blanket. Sorry, Ryan's Toys Reviews, who's one of the most financially successful YouTubers going, but... was he like a 9-year-old kid that just plays for toys? Like, that kid, I feel so bad for him, because, like... He's going to grow up in such a distorted world. Like, even
I don't know what this is. It's another one of those.
So yeah, Ryan Toys Reviews is like he's like a kid that reviews toys, and he's weirdly successful. Like, he gets all these toy deals to advertise and play with toys on YouTube. He's like a child star of YouTube, and he makes like he's one of the top earners of YouTube, and it sounds like
a pushy parents thing.
It could be a pushy parents thing. I don't know much about the channel. There are definitely like family vlogging children channels that are pushy parent things. I know there's been pushes to bring in child labor laws into YouTube and stuff like that. Mm. But even given the most amount of benefit of the doubt to Ryan's Toys Reviews, even if it's he's having a good time, making lots of money, it's all going into a college fund, all that kind of stuff. Like, he's still going to get fucked up. Like, it's still, like, it's like, you know, let kids be kids, you know, like normal kids. Like, I feel sorry for the kid, really, because like he doesn't.
The new generation, because like in the 80s and to an extent in the 90s and obviously before, like kid actors were fucked up. Just every kid actor. Yeah. give or take, was fucked up in some
Macaulay
way.
Culkin.
Macaulay Culkin, Drew Barrymore, you know, all the Phoenixes and Rivers and whatever, and yeah, and you know, obviously going back, Shirley Temple and all fucked up. And then I think Hollywood sort of realized this is actually bad for us financially, and we should, you know, give these kids, when they are kid actors, first of all, you know, rules about how much they can work, that kind of thing, and also get them, you know, people to talk to, support networks, essentially. And I think that, you know, that situation improved. And then we created this new medium with online video that hasn't learned those lessons. And yeah, you're going to have, generations of absolutely completely fucked up kids.
Yeah. And I always kind of feel like this might end up being a permanent game of catch up, because it's not even just YouTube isn't the only video game in town anymore. TikTok being the obvious competitor. Now, TikTok limits their video, this, you know, short form content. But if you are of the old, you know, type of vlogger, you know, YouTuber, TikTok is a much more natural place for you to go rather than to hang about on YouTube, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. What's the actual limit on TikTok, do you know?
10 minutes.
10 minutes, that's reasonable. You can say
you can do a lot in 10 minutes.
I assume if you've got something longer to say, you just do one out of however.
Yeah, you could do, although sequential stuff doesn't really flow that well on TikTok. But like, what can't you get into 10 minutes? Yeah. You know, you can get stuff into 10 minutes. Like, it's...
Yeah. Well, I definitely watch stuff you couldn't get into 10 minutes, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, and YouTube's up to 3 on their shorts. Tell a lie. This isn't going to be my last YouTube video for a while anyway, because I've got some shorts lined up that are in the old scheduled list.
I'm enjoying your shorts, yeah. I don't think it doesn't need to be a hard cut off. You can, you know, state your intention and then sort of wean yourself off it. Because, I mean, you've been doing it for a long fucking time, apart from anything else. You've put a lot into
13 it. 13 years?
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I'm finding it a big move for me. Because, like, you know, I'm not losing a great, you know, I'm not... the people that used to watch my stuff, they're not on YouTube anymore. Like, a lot of them are on the Feddy anyway. A lot of them just they've moved on. Like, that's one of the things as well I was thinking about when it comes to professional YouTubers. The number of them that actually have a career that goes past 5 years is infinitesimally small. Like, trying to stay relevant for longer than a couple of years on YouTube in any way, shape, or form. It's unless you're Mr. Beast or whatever.
Doesn't apply to this is in the mainstream, right? In the niches, you can just trundle along with your, you know, your sort of niche dedicated audience forever, basically.
And to be honest, if I was willing to talk about Linux distributions for every video, I could probably trundle along relatively comfortably.
I mean, that's the thing, right? You could, you know, that kind of living you were talking about, where it's like maybe minimum wage, maybe a bit more. You've got an audience that wants a certain kind of video, that you know how to make those videos and you're good at it, so you could do that. But it wouldn't be what, you know, you wouldn't be doing. What's the point then? You're not doing what you enjoy. You know, you're
it's just a job. Yeah. It's a job without a pension, you know, like it's, I could, like,
unless you leaned into, I think there's room for that kind of channel, your exact kind of channel, doing the Let's Review Mint 12.0 point whatever, you know, every fortnight, and just doing it satirically. just noting all the things that are exactly the same as the previous.
I mean, that's not far off from my older content, to be honest. It's, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, a lot of it just feels it's time to move on. Like, and also interestingly enough, like it's probably really the last Google thing that I use is YouTube. I probably still watch YouTube, but
I use the search still, really, just because. I mean, without getting into it, like, Google search has become so shit now. It's so shit now. But anything that is as good is also corporate. You know what I mean? Like, I could go to Bing. That's about as good as YouTube now. I could go to Yandex, I guess, if I could get around the block. And that's, I assume that's about as good as I said, YouTube, you know, as good as Google. But, like, what's the point? It's all, if it's a corporate owned So I know there are things like Cirque and there's Yahtzee, which is a distributed, but they are not as good as Google. It's something where I put convenience first.
And there's apparently there's Kagi or Kagi, K-I-G-I, K-A-G-I. But you have to pay like £5 a month for that.
Especially on YouTube, all the fucking rabid people who are yelling DuckDuckGo. Like, it's just Bing.
Mm. I actually use DuckDuckGo.
I mean, that's fine. There's no reason, it's no worse than using, but it's just fucking Bing.
But also the same problem remains now, which is whenever I look for anything, recipes or how to change a plug or anything like that, whatever I'm searching for at that moment, the first few results are from an AI generated website with AI generated content.
It's Google now has that quality of. There's a certain kind of search that's still very good at. Like, if I type, what was that film with aliens and a blonde man uses a hammer to, like, knock down a water... Like if I do that kind of search, it will get it.
Mm.
The very vague... Yeah, that kind of search is great. Anything specific, it's become increasingly worse at. And it's become like that friend who thinks they know better than you when you ask them for something.
Yeah.
You know, like, you ask them to pick you up a couple of whatevers and they bring you something else because it's better. Yeah. Like, it's that. You know what I mean? It's...
Oh, yeah. That's... Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah. Have I said everything? Oh, also, one thing that I do keep thinking about from time to time, so this might be the bit where I'm a hypocrite, is that I do, from time to time, think about getting back into Twitch. And I'm saying Twitch specifically rather than Owncast, and that would be more for gaming-y stuff, because it does feel like... I kind of miss a little bit of... Because what I do YouTube really for is... Well, what I did YouTube for was kind of the community, but the thing is, I turned off comments on YouTube videos because they were shit.
Maddening.
And the people on the people that leave PeerTube comments or Fediverse comments, they're great. And it's as simple as that.
The difference is stock. Just so people know, this isn't like snobbishness or we're pretending. Comments on YouTube are just people who've watched one minute of the video and responding angrily to the thing they saw in that 1 minute. Or, you know, why is this video 3 hours? You know, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And on PeerTube, it is, without exception, just like actual thoughtful comments, you know, interesting opinions. You know, they'll disagree with us, which it's not anti-disagreement. They'll disagree with us, but they'll disagree with us from a point of knowledge and having an interesting point of view.
Yeah, but also, at least the rabid, angry comments that we do get on PeerTube are, like, grammatic, like, they're well formatted. they're like, you know, like, they're grievances from people that aren't just, enjoying just being angry on the internet all the time.
None of the bot stuff on PeerTube. Not that it's immune from that. That could happen, but it, you know, it's not a focus at the moment. So none of the bot stuff.
Yeah, and I always do wonder, because I get the same amount of comments on PeerTube as I ever did on YouTube, maybe more on PeerTube recently. And you could say part of that is because YouTube, like the culture of YouTube, is less community, more broadcast. PeerTube
it's become less community over time, I think.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, definitely. And that's but. Oh, I've lost my thread. But like, yeah, like that. That's, but yeah. So I've turned the comments off. So I'm not even doing it for community reasons. I'm doing it out of habit. Yeah. I'm doing it out of habit.
Well, you know, I think it's habit, and I think it's a little bit of there is still an audience over there. There's still some people who clearly want to see your stuff over there. So it would, I would imagine, it would feel a little bit of a disservice not to just stick it up there. Like, I'm sure that must come into it, right?
That's my line of thought. But to those people, I implore you, if you're not going to subscribe or follow me on PeerTube, there's an RSS. You can follow me on RSS. You can just watch on the website. And if you're on Twitch, then
honestly, I'm not sure if you would want this, but like everything you make is licensed Creative Commons, right?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody in your audience really wants it to be on YouTube, just do a Chris Ware bootleg channel and just upload them all there.
You're right. I wouldn't like that. If anyone's going to do,
I think that's fine. I like that's fine.
I mean, it's within it. I wouldn't step in, but just if anyone is going to do that, just make it clear it's a bootleg channel.
You couldn't step in with them being Creative Commons.
No, I couldn't. I couldn't. But like, just make it clear that it's a bootleg channel or whatever, because I'm, you know.
Yeah, they tend to. Yeah, I mean, there's ones for. I like Chapo. I like Chapo Trap House, and there's a ton of because they lock some stuff behind Patreon. Some is just time locked, some of it's pay for and stuff, and there's a ton of bootleg channels on YouTube for them, and I think they're quite happy with that. Being socialists. I think that's absolutely fine. I think that's
Although we can say things like YouTube is awful and you should all be blocking ads, and it'll probably just tank the video on YouTube anyway.
But I think doing that, if everything was Creative Commons and anybody could upload it anywhere, that it sort of disempowers this notion of, you know, the creator and the brand and all that stuff. It sort of takes the power away from that in a healthy way, I think. So, yeah.
I've always got, I always try and get myself out of that mindset because there's being like recognizable. So if someone who knows you, you know, you want to be like recognized, but at the same time,
it's not about the language. It's just people thinking of themselves as a brand. That's depressing.
Yeah, that's pretty dystopian, really, isn't it? I know that word is very much overused these days, but
for a reason.
For a reason. It's the and also one of the things that I do, like, you know, all of this is like time and thought and mental energy and all that kind of stuff. And if PeerTube, if the Fediverse is ever going to succeed, I don't know, like, success metrics are kind of weird and all that kind of stuff. But like, if we want it to be a good place, we kind of have to put our energy into it. You know, I don't want to put my, So it's a sort of a commit. And that's one of the things I've always liked about Hamish is that he committed, you know,
the principles come first, and I respect the shit out of that. I'm sure most of the people watching this are familiar with Hamish, but if you're not, it's his own PeerTube instance. It's his PeerTube instance that we use when we make stuff. And he does a ton of videos and has been doing them for years. And they're really good. He does techie videos, he does space versions with us, he does cultural stuff. He's got like a whole mix of stuff. Like, go to video.thepolarbear.co.uk and like check that shit out.
Yeah, and all of our stuff will be on there. And and I kind of want to follow in them footsteps, really. You know, like, because even it's hard to separate. You know, like when I make stuff just for PeerTube, I feel so freer about it as well. You know. I feel like this is gonna sound silly, but I feel like it's trailblazing. Like, this is
it is this is a new frontier.
You know, we're
in a colonial way.
No
living here, but
it's just taking back a bit of space from the big five.
I don't want to get too deep into that because I think it's something we talked about a lot, but like, I do think there is, especially amongst like Gen Z, I think there is a trend against all of the, you know, the branding, the big sites, the silos. I think there is a movement away from it, but obviously, you know, your average mainstream normal person won't know of PeerTube. They won't know that there is an alternative that doesn't have all those qualities. Like, you don't have to get completely out of it. You don't have to stop using computers. There are places. Something came up in conversation the other day, actually. You know the kind of people who are depressed with technology, you know, they're on Twitter and they hate it, so that what they think they've got to do is give up the internet, basically.
Yeah.
As opposed to what I think I, you know, the people we talk to, what we've always done on the internet, which is find a community. Because the problem with Twitter is you don't have friends on Twitter.
No.
You know, we have friends and we hang out. It's just an extension of social life.
Yeah,
that's how you do the internet. It's biased. It's how I do the internet, but that's how you do the internet. If you don't want to be sad on the internet, treat it that way.
Yeah, it's the pub in the sky. You know, it's
He's the fox in the sky. It's not the, what's the McLuhan thing? The global village. It's not the global village. It's the pub in the sky. Yeah.
Pub in the sky. Yeah, that sounds a little bit like it could be Pratchett or something. The pub in the sky.
Oh no, you put me off it. Sorry. fucking hate Pratchett.
I couldn't. I've got, what have I got? I've got Colour of Magic up there. I'm gonna get through it one of these days, but I had it on audiobook and I couldn't follow it.
It's that kind of British humour. It's again Hitchhikers is the same. Hitchhikers is a bit cleverer, but it's that kind of, and there was a man and his hat was a fish. It's just base level absurdism.
Monty Python was a bit like that too.
Yeah, Monty Python, yeah, and groundbreaking in its time. But, you know, move on.
yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's sort of well known that comedy doesn't really age. Very little comedy ages quite well. There's a few. Like, do you ever watch Porridge? Ronnie Barker?
Porridge is great, yeah.
Yeah, that's aged wonderfully.
I think if I watch a Charlie Chaplin film now, you can appreciate what was funny. You can still be amused by it, but it's a very sort of also an academic form of amusement. But I think the Marx Brothers for me still holds up. Their stuff is still actually, because it's quite satirical and cutting, it still holds up, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean,
Not completely.
But like, I never begrudge comedy for aging like milk, because a lot of it does.
Comedy's fucking weird. So I got Ghosty onto Arrested Development, and then after Arrested Development, Ghosty got me onto Todd Margaret, which is a show that nobody's heard of and nobody's fucking seen.
No.
It's not on anything. And I think it is the best comedy ever made. Hands down, it is just the best comedy ever made, right? But I watched the whole, I can't remember how many, it's a handful of seasons of like 6 episodes per season. It's super short. And I watched the whole thing in a few days, and I don't think I laughed once. So it's, I mean, that's an exaggeration. I laughed maybe 2 or 3 times, but it's this comedy that's just, it's like, it's funny, it's amusing me, but it's not like set up joke. So there's no like, you don't have that, you know, cathartic release of whatever. It's doing something else. It's making me feel awkward. It's making me think about things. It's tickling me, amusing me.
Oh, like on cinema.
Yeah, like on cinema. Yeah, you don't laugh. You know, well, I mean, I do occasionally, but that's not the kind of comedy. There's, I don't know. I feel like I'm saying something weird. Like this comedy.
No, I got it. Yeah. I kind of like that when it's. I like it under certain circumstances, and that's about as specific as I can get with it. Like, my description of it, like, when it lands amazingly. I think it's sometimes what Ricky Gervais tries to do.
Yes, yeah.
But I don't...
pathos. It's pathos comedy.
I think with Ricky...
Social awkwardness, awkwardness, just people being, failing in a very particular way, which again, older British comedy did, but for me it did it into too far into it, like people mentioned, like Fawlty Towers and Dad's Army and stuff like that. I mean, that's too clownish. I want it to be more understated than that.
Yeah, understated is quite amusing there. It bubbles beneath the surface. I think there's a YouTube channel, and I'm going to maybe misremember it, called Meditations of an Anxious Mind. I think it's called that. And it's this guy who just does street interviews. Like one day he'll do goths, and the other day he'll do city boys, you know, like City of London type boys, various different, like, you know, my favorite one was the skin fade North Face combo, people that have skin fade haircuts and then just wear North Face jackets. and it's like that particular sort of, it's a bit of commentary, it's very cutting commentary, but Meditations for the Anxious Mind. That's the channel.
That's another thing that came up actually in relation to Todd Margaret, and this sounds very much that, is stuff, the worst stuff to watch. I can watch anything in any brow, right? But the only things I can't watch are things that think they're smart or are trying to trick you into thinking they're smart or pretending they're smart when they're actually dumb.
Yeah.
I hate that, but I love the opposite of that. I love things that are superficially dumb, but under the surface, quite smart. And what you're describing kind of sounds like that. And Todd Margaret is very much that.
Yeah. He does. Oh, he does LinkedIn warriors, just like street street commentary with LinkedIn. Oh, my God. People that post on LinkedIn. I went on LinkedIn, I think, like yesterday or the day before. It's very repetitive content, and it's fucking awful.
It's miserable for everybody that that site has managed to be the one you have to use if you want to get a job.
I don't even think it is. Like, I think it's got that.
I want to think it was.
People say that about LinkedIn, but I have never found it even close to helpful for anything professional. The only thing I use it for is if I need to get in touch with like a reference or something.
Well, I think maybe for a certain kind of like PMC style, middle management-y job, it probably is that. But yeah, it's not.
Middle management. Like I've been looking at a lot of jobs lately, and I was flicking through a few things in the corporate world that I might have transferable skills for, and the language of all of these job descriptions and company. Cover boilerplate stuff and all that. It was awful. Like I could survive in that environment.
It literally drains your soul just reading the descriptions, right? It's just soul destroying.
Like fast paced environment, sort of grind. It's like that grind set thing, but also with a suit and tie. Like it's just
It's always written like you're trying to both humanize it and dehumanize it at the same time. So you end up with this strange middle ground of like, it sounds like it's written by an alien who's been studying our culture kind of thing. It's got that feel to it.
Yeah. I would, and now I'm looking at a lot of jobs that are just like, working in coffee shops or something like that. I don't really have any proper experience for, but I'm just like, most of the skills I have, I don't want to be in the environment I can do that. And I'm like, maybe if I just take a year waiting tables or something, because I don't need that purpose in my professional life. Like I just need a paycheck really, and because like doing this is something that I care deeply about. That's one of the reasons
capitalism has tricked us into believing that we should get our fulfillment through our wage labor rather than just get money through your wage labor and get fulfillment elsewhere.
Exactly. Yeah. Like when I sometimes think about like if YouTube does something to piss me off, I think, oh, is there somewhere else I can post my videos? Like Instagram. But then it's like, but Instagram is probably worse than YouTube. And also like if I succeed on Instagram, so what? Who gives a fuck? Like, and it's the same thing with TikTok.
At least YouTube used to have community and culture to it, whereas Instagram has never been that. It's always just been grifters.
It's grifters and just
everybody uses. I'm sure there's people on there doing cool stuff, but like that's the culture has always been the grift.
Yeah. And well, let's not forget that Facebook, Meta, whatever it's fucking called, have been. Like whistleblowers have outed them for basically using algorithms to like exploit people at their weakest moments, diet pills for anorexic teenagers.
This was a leak, wasn't it? It was a memo or something, or an email or something that like they'd worked out algorithmically or whatever that depressed people spend more money.
Yeah.
And also, teenagers spend more money. So, target depressed teenagers with your ads and you'll make more money.
If
you've got the power to... This is the problem with things being in private hands. If you've got the power to identify depressed teenagers, so much better things you can do with that information than fucking sell them shit. That's a useful thing to have.
Yeah. Although, but then again, if the government was hunting down depressed teenagers to help them, I don't know, I feel a bit nervous
pushing them into military service now is what it would be.
I was reading an article today about how police are looking to use AI to predict crimes.
Awesome.
Oh my word. I want to be on a direction that is not that, you know. I don't want to be part of,
Well, if we're doing that, why not cut out the middleman, get the AI to commit crimes, and then the police can solve them, you know, not by cheating, not looking at, you know, what the AI has done, and then everybody's happy, everybody's fulfilled then, you know.
I mean, AI, many people would suggest, is committing crimes. So I'd yeah it I yeah so I anyway, I've labored this topic a lot now. I'm kind of done with YouTube, really. Find me elsewhere. Links and website will be will be with this video. And you know, I hope to see you in the Feddie, I guess. There we go.
Okay,
There
I'm
was
more
a
cheerful though. Go on, sorry.
No, you wouldn't want to talk about your Kobo.
I want to talk about my Kobo, yeah. So got my Kobo, had it for like 10 years. It's great.
What's the type, what's the model of it?
Kobo, I only know this because I was fucking around with it, but Kobo Clara HD, which is basically just the bog standard one. It's if I actually turn it on. Actually let me go back and pretend I was reading something a bit more worthy. Don't want people catching me reading the slot that I actually read most of the time.
Some sort of fan
There
fiction.
we go. So there we go. That's what I was reading. There's the screen. Yeah, anyway, so it's been great, little e-reader. Love everything about it. But recently, it started behaving oddly. Just for reading books, it's totally fine. But when I plug it in and transfer things to it, half the time that just wasn't working. All of the time when I unplug it, it's not going back to its normal screen. It's getting stuck on the "we are transferring stuff" screen. To solve that, I had to do a hard reboot. The hard reboot was failing about 7 out of 8 times, and also even when it was working, was incredibly slow. As I tried a bunch of things, right? You know, like a factory reset. Well, I tried factory resetting it, it just wouldn't. It got stuck factory resetting, so that didn't work. Eventually, worked out that the so inside you can take the back off quite easily, and inside for storage they've just got a micro SD card, and the micro SD card was just fucked. So I was like, okay, so if I DD that and copy that to a new micro SD card, maybe it'll be able to, you know, sort of recover itself. And I tried many times to DD the image, but I didn't really quite understand how DD works. If DD encounters errors, it just sort of moves on. So you can't really get an image of a faulty file system. So DD wouldn't work in. But apparently what I needed was DD rescue, because DD rescue sort of does clever things to try and get the data off. And if it can't, it actually puts something in its place, so it's not just, you know, everything the wrong length. So I used DD rescue. I made an image of the card that was in here. I didn't really have a spare card. The only spare card I had was the one that came in my little handheld retro gaming thing, which apparently I replaced that immediately because people say they're just shit. They fail very quickly. But that's the only one I had. It's six, so I've gone from 8 gigs in this thing. And bear in mind, I've got hundreds and hundreds of books in here. I've never even touched a gig, because ebooks are like 2 megs max, and most of them are like 300 kilobytes. Yeah, so I've gone from having 8 gigs in here to 64 gigs in here. But yeah, DD rescued, made an image of the CF card that was in here, then DD'd that onto the 64 gig card, and then used gparted to expand the part, you know, because obviously it made an 8 gigabyte partition. So yeah, made the partition full size, stuck it in here. Kind of wasn't really expecting it to work. I was like, this seems, you know. But yeah, app just booted immediately. It's responsive. It's like it's brand new again. And like I say, this
Fantastic.
CF card is no doubt going to die soon, but I can just replace it with a cheap 8, you know, even like 4 gig one would be fine.
Have you got the image
Yeah.
that you DD rescued?
Yeah, I kept the image. Yeah, I kept the image so I can re-image a new card. But yeah, just using, you know, Linux command line stuff, breathes new life into this, so I don't have to buy a new one, which is great because I can't afford one. Yeah, I'm really fucking happy about that. I've got 64 gigabytes of ebook space if I want it, which is, I'm sure that's all the ebooks in the world.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's because I didn't really understand the difference between DD and DD Rescue. I don't think I've
No,
ever.
DD Rescue is kind of what it sounds like. Yeah, if you've got a faulty file system, it will do its best, yeah, to get something usable. And yeah, so immediately, as soon as this thing booted, it booted quickly. It seemed fine, but I was like, if I do a factory reset on it now, it might, if there's any damaged data on there, it might hopefully, yeah, sort of, repair it. But yeah, it works absolutely. It fucking, when I unplug it from the computer, it just goes immediately back to the screen it should. It boots quickly. It's, yeah, beautiful.
Nice, nice. Do you need an online account with Kobo?
It kind of, yeah. When you first turn it on, it will ask you to sign in to a Kobo account. But there are ways around that. The all their stuff is quite open, I think, and there are definitely ways around that, yeah.
Okay. But it's easy enough to get an account. You don't need Windows or anything like that to like
No, you don't need
switch
to
that
do
up, no?
anything with the account. Yeah, when you switch on, it gives you a URL to go to and a number. And you go to that URL, you type in the number, and then it's like, yep, your device is activated. Yeah, but you don't have to do. There were ways around that, but I don't particularly care because I never connect it. As soon as it's set up, I disconnect the Wi-Fi, and I connect it about once a year to check for OS updates, and that's it.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
I'm
And
not an e-reader.
how do you transfer books over to it?
I use Calibre. Yeah, just have all my books in Calibre, and it's just one click in Calibre, and it sends all the books up.
Okay, easy as that. So is there a way to, if you plug it in, does it just give you access to the file system, or is there something a bit more? So
This just straight up, you can CD into the file system, yeah, and poke
and it's
around with
just
it, and
what
you can
eat a
edit
bunch
stuff
of
in there
EPUB
as well, actually.
books.
Because unlike, I think the Kindles are running a form of Android, whereas these ones are just running straight up Linux,
Okay. Oh, that's
which
interesting.
is
I
really
didn't.
cool. You can install, you can SSH into it, and all that stuff if you want. So you could set it up so that you could transfer stuff over, SCP or whatever. But yeah, it's really nice. Really nice e-reader. It's not like completely open. It is linked to a company. It's got an account and that, but it's a lot less closed in than the Kindles.
Yeah, I did. I was looking at e-ink. I like the e-ink sort of, but the ones that are more general purpose Android, because rather than thinking of just books, I was thinking, well, but like my RSS feed or something like that. Could I do that? But to get anything like that, you're talking like hundreds of quid. It's.
They're great if you just want to use them for books and art, like some people say, like comic books and stuff or whatever. But for me, it's just books. You just want black and white text. They're fucking great. I think if you try and do anything more internet-y with them, they certainly less capable of that, yeah, by far.
Yeah, but it's the e-ink that's cool about it. I mean, I'm looking at the Kobo website now. It's 100 brand new, sold out apparently, but it's £119.99, £120.
Yeah, is that the Clara? I think they call it the Clara BW now, black and white.
This is the Clara HD it says here, but yeah, it might be. What other stuff have they got? Why read with e-readers? Yeah, BW.
Yeah, I think that's the equivalent of the one that I've got now.
Oh, that's 130.
What was the one you were looking at then?
That was the Clara HD or whatever it was, the one that you said you had, but they were
What's the
sold out, so
name?
they're probably not selling that anymore at all.
I think they just don't sell it anymore. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, you can do inverted. You can do black
Yeah.
background, white text.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you have a preference one way around or the other?
I just because I'm used to reading actual books, I just keep it black on white. And partly also because I don't know if that's I don't that's, actually this probably doesn't make a difference, but on an e-ink screen, white is off and black is on. So I in my head, like, less on means less battery, but that might not be the case because I know they only use power when they change the screen. That's how e-ink works.
Oh, that's fantastic. I just thought it had a
Yeah.
really, really, really low refresh rate.
No, it does not refresh. It only refreshes when the content changes. When it can stay. So if I turn it off completely now, I mean, I've got it set to show the cover when it's turned off completely, but when it's turned off completely and nothing's powered at all, it's just, you can't really see it because the backlight goes off, obviously, but like just the book cover, that and that would stay that way. If I took the battery out, that would stay that way.
Wow.
Yeah, which is why they use so little power, and why I can, you know, I read a decent amount on this now when I'm in a reading phase, and I charge this about once a month at the most, or the least, whichever makes sense.
I wish I just had £130 just to throw away. No, I wouldn't be thrown away.
I think it's the kind of thing where you can get a second-hand one just fine. Like, especially these ones, because they've got the CF card storage. You know, the worst that happens is the storage is faulty and you can get an 8 gigabyte SD card. You've probably got an SD card.
Yeah, I've got one around here, yeah. I'm going to just have a look on eBay. What's the market like for them? So go to condition used. We are looking at... was $39.99 for a Kobo Arc 7 HD.
Well, don't know Arc what that 7. Is.
Kobo Touch e-reader tablet, 6-inch display, Wi-Fi.
Oh, that's so, a color one, man.
Yeah, what was the one you said you had?
Kobo Clara HD. Search for Kobo Clara and then avoid the color ones.
£80, 71, but that looks like it's color. £60 down here. Oh, hang on a minute, I gotta go condition used. Okay, 70, 80, 60. They don't come down in price.
They do refurbs on the Kobo site, actually. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's cool. Get them, faulty ones are quite cheap. I don't know. The on eBay, they don't appear to be coming. They don't appear to come down. Like, you can get £80.
That's kind of, yeah, it's a little bit unsurprising because, like I say, there's very little that can go wrong with them, you know. Like,
yeah. And it, you know, because it's like they're slow moving devices in a way, you know.
Yeah.
Not much changes, you know. Do you? It's not the kind of thing you upgrade every 2 years like a phone.
I had what I think was a second gen Kindle, the one the black one with the like physical keyboard at the bottom. That was still working fine when I got rid of it. I only got rid of it because it had the big fucking keyboard at the bottom that was pointless, and I replaced it with this, and that was still working fine. And this was several generations of e-ink on, and honestly, it's like the e-ink is e-ink. Like, yeah, it looked a little bit better, but you know, already like the second gen Kindle looked better than, you know, when you get like a shitty fantasy book paperback.
Yeah,
like that's not the best paper. That's not the whitest paper in the world. The paper is brown already. So this already looks better than, you know, like 20 years ago, this already looked better than that. Maybe not 20, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, sorting. So I've just got Kobo and I've sorted lowest first. There's one here that's like 21. Oh, God, 16, but surely some of these are parts. It doesn't say it in the titles. 30, 40. 40, lot at 40.
Yeah.
It's used. I mean, it looks like an older model. Oh, this is a bid. This is bids. I want buy it now. Buy it now. What's... Okay. Oh, faulty. Tested and working for £30. Pre-owned.
Yeah.
Okay. Used.
I mean, yeah, I guess the battery gets worse over time, but yeah, this thing's going on 10 years old and not noticed any difference with how often I have to charge it. So
I can get one for 30, I don't know, 2 gigabytes, but then, you know, 5 inches.
Hundreds of ebooks and I'm not even scratching a gigabyte, so 2 gigabytes is absolutely fine for an e-reader.
Yeah, 5 inches isn't too bad, is it?
When you do get an ebook that's like a couple of megs or whatever, it's usually just the cover, and you can change that in Caliber.
Yeah. Tempting. Oh, cool.
They're good, yeah.
All right. Should we move on to
specifically for reading ebooks? I don't even recommend them for PDFs. I don't think they're good for PDFs. So as long as you can get, you know, Yeah. What you about... can read a PDF on them, but the thing about the PDF is when you zoom, you're zooming rather than making the text bigger.
What about if you would like, if you were in going to meetings and stuff and you'd want like a list of minutes or agenda items or something?
I think you'd use it as that, but honestly, I don't think that's what they're best suited for. They're best suited for reading text-based books that are released, okay, you know, that you can get in like EPUB or whatever.
Yeah. Because, yeah, you could just do that on your phone, really, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because then you'd have to EPUB them across. It'd probably be a little bit more awkward.
And whereas, also, like, the screen is not the most responsive. You know, when you turn a page, like, there's a quarter of a second delay. Maybe not that much now, but yeah, it's not super because of the nature of the technology. It's not super responsive. Like, I mean, I don't know if you can say, I'll turn the page. You sort of see it. You know, it's not. It's quick, but it's not as responsive as a phone or something.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, I've been thinking, okay, this is something, is an odd thing to say, but I've been thinking a little bit about PDFs recently, because PDFs are like, they're a paper format, aren't they? They're analog to usually like an A4 or what Americans would call a letter, but I've used them for like publishing and printing in the past. But you, a lot of the times when people want a document, they'll ask for it in a PDF format, which, you know, that's quite normal. But we still haven't got a standard for PDFs to be on mobile. Like, if you wanted to send someone a PDF file, say I don't know, a CV or a report or a list of minutes for a meeting or something, most people, I think, I don't even know, most people, a lot of people in certain environments would just love to have that on their phone rather than, you know, who prints shit out anymore? Like, you know, I love the idea that printers are kind of fading away. We've never managed to solve them, not on Windows, not on Linux, just they've always failed on us.
That's largely because back in the day, printers were good and expensive, and then they got cheap and shit. That's part of the problem with that, really, is printers just be, you know, when they became a consumer thing, they became shit.
Yeah. But so if you want something to reference, a piece of paper, then it makes sense to have a way to put that onto a standard way to put that onto a phone, i.e. a PDF but for mobile. But like, what you can narrow down a PDF to a couple of, like, I don't know, 6 centimeters or something like
The problem with this is, it's people using the wrong fucking PDFs are not good at that. That is not a good thing to do with the problem with I fucking hate PDFs. And the problem with PDFs for me is if you're working in print, they're great because it's what you will see when it's printed. That's the upside. The downside is you're taking digital information and giving it all the downsides of print.
Yeah.
You know, a fixed layout, basically, which is awful for most things you want to view on a screen. For viewing on a screen, PDF should not be the answer. It's a terrible solution.
I mean, first of all, it's more often than not portrait.
Yeah.
On a, you know, usually when Rosie's doing work stuff and she gets asked to put together something that a lot of people would think to put into a PDF, she does slideshows. Because at least then it fits into a screen properly.
But for anything text-based, or, you know, if it's text and images and you want a particular layout, a flexible but a particular layout, HTML is better, which is what ebooks use. I think all ebooks formats are just zipped up HTML. And for anything else, just a fucking text file, or, you know, at worst a rich text file, but ideally just text file or HTML is what we should have.
I mean, you technically, it's there. Like, you can save a Word document as an HTML file with relatively decent success.
But I mean, why do we use PDF over ebook formats? You know, if I just want to send you, you know, a couple of pages of text that are, you know, page-like, that the page character has importance, then use ebook formats. They're just zipped up HTML, and then, you know, there's plenty of viewers for ebooks on desktop.
I wonder, I'd love to hear from Windows viewers amongst friends of the show. do you still use Adobe Acrobat to read PDF files? Because that doesn't even cross my mind. If I'm looking at a PDF file, it's either in whatever came installed with Debian, or it opens up in Firefox if it's like on my phone or whatever. Or I don't have Firefox. I have, what's the F-Droid one? Fennec or something.
Oh, okay.
Fennec, yeah. But yeah, like it just opens up in my web browser. So is that the same for everyone else? Do they open it up in Google Docs, or is there a Microsoft thing for it?
Honestly, I think if you're nerd leaning, which you know most of our audience is, and particularly a Linux user, I think you just encounter PDFs so seldom anyway.
Oh, I think it's more in the corporate land.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you get a lot of PDFs. I think the thing is
reason they settled on PDFs is because docs were terrible.
Yes.
Incompatibilities between versions and stuff, whereas PDF, PDF will always look like what you want it to look like, so long as you've got something that can view it. But
yeah, and also with docs, if you don't have the font, it just you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at least with PDFs you can embed a font into it. It's a hammer, when really what you want is not a hammer. Sorry, that was leaning into a metaphor, and then it just sort of crumbled apart.
No.
Yeah. So, there's one more thing I want to talk about before we head off to Divinity 2. That is, have you heard about how Gmail are going to implement their end-to-end encryption?
No.
Okay. So, I'm going to try and send this to you in Discord without like screwing up everything. Okay.
I'll open that up. I'll make my tea and I'll have a look.
Okay. So basically, their thought of bringing in end-to-end encryption, sort of, maybe, guess if you squint your eyes, maybe. Oh my God, they released this on April 1st. I've only just noticed this. And I'm going to feel so stupid if this is an April Fool's joke.
Corporation says something perfectly plausible. You're not foolish for believing it.
I don't think it is, because it's still up, right? They should take it down.
Yeah. Right.
Hang on a minute.
What were they saying they're doing? This is right.
Okay.
What were they
saying? So basically, if it's Gmail to Gmail, it's going to be seamless. Right. If you have to, the spicy bit is when it comes into if you're emailing someone who's not on Gmail. For example, Microsoft seems to do the majority of corporate email these days with Teams, and that includes all the domains that all the businesses have. So if you're using Gmail and you're emailing an encrypted email to someone else, what it will do is it will send them a link to the email. You click on the link and then it opens up a one-time Gmail mini client in the browser where you can then read the...
I think that's how Proton Mail does it. And that's how, when I've been communicating with like government stuff, it was when I was communicating with the CAB, that's how they do it. They send you an email with a link in. You go to a web page and it, one time decrypts it or whatever.
For government stuff?
It was CAB. I thought it was government. No, it was CAB.
What's CAB?
Citizen Vice.
Oh, right. I gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, that's government adjacent, I guess, usually. This is insane to me.
It might be an April Fool, it might not be.
I don't think it's an April Fool.
It's completely plausible. I mean, I think that's how they would, that's the thing. If you're not using something that is an open standard, like fucking GPG, this is how you have to do it, really.
Postio seems to do it quite well. Also, with Postio, I don't know if I mentioned this before. If someone using Proton Mail emails Postio, our end to end encryption is interoperable.
That's seamless. Yeah, that's cool.
So we have a standard there. But I don't know. I just think that's a joke. Like, it's like, who's going to open an email with a link in it?
That's the thing. If you're home brewing your end to end encryption, there's kind of no other way to do it, really. Also, there's an interest in, you know, if they want to make it hassle for people not using Gmail, so you're like, fuck it, I'll just use Gmail then, I guess.
I think it's much more likely to go, we just won't.
The opposite way.
Yeah, just won't reply to the email.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if someone with a Gmail account emails you. I'm guessing that this is likely more of a corporate thing because it's on the Workspaces blog, so
yeah.
Don't release news on April 1st.
If you're concerned with privacy, security, whatever encryption takes care of, and you're on Gmail, like be somewhere else. Like, what are you doing?
We know that, like. Is it like the FBI or something, or one of the American letter alphabet organizations? Yeah. They have like carte blanche into Google stuff anyway. Like I think.
They're all going to be backdoored by the three letter agencies. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they volunteer it. Like, I think they're.
Well, they're legally obliged. If they get a subpoena saying give you this information, then if they have that information, they have to give it over.
Yeah, yeah, but I think it's even like in practice.
Yeah. Rather than contacting us every time, just use this route to get in. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's another example of how, like, paying a euro a month for email is fine. It's worth. Yeah. You know,
well, it works great for me because you always give it to me as my birthday present, so I don't even have to think about it. It's just when I get the email from Postio telling me my money's out, I'm like, oh, Chris gave me a voucher, didn't he? Just put that in, and that's another year of email. Yeah,
it's whenever I do that, I usually top up my own while I'm at it. So
yes, it's like a reminder. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and easy birthday present because
it's great because it's a good birthday present because just like it's a thing that's a little bit of hassle and you just take away all the hassle.
Yeah, what I do like about Postio is that you can technically pay in cash.
SDF you can pay in cash as well. You can literally post them an envelope full of cash, which is great.
Yeah, you can post some mail. I don't know if they ever did crypto or anything like that. I think maybe, but like, that's more hassle. That's like just mail them the cash. Yeah. It's just easy.
Yeah.
And also, what I like about Postio as well is like not only do they have a person to they have a support line that you can just email. But also they do a lot that, like, as a company, they're one of those companies that's not dedicated to growth. They're like, we've got a sustainable number of users, you know, as long as the ship stays relatively level, all hunky dory.
They give
their workers a free lunch.
Yeah. Which is cool. That can be, Google do that kind of thing for more cynical reasons, but yeah, that's one that can go either way. But yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
What's the bad way? It can go
well. The reason Google have like an in-house chefs and like masseuses and all the services and like you can go and just like play pinball or, all that shit. Sounds like a really dumb way of describing it. But the reason they have all that is they don't want to give you a reason to leave the office, basically.
Ah, gotcha.
All of the reasons that you might have for just wanting some time out of the office, they give you that in the office, so that you're always in the fucking office, and that's your home, basically.
Ah, I gotcha. Yeah, there. Well, I'm assuming that Postio don't do that because they seem
nice.
Yeah, it's and they host talks there about online privacy, and I think they even make charitable donations to various organizations as well, and also all open source software.
And green energy, as far as
green
that,
energy,
you know, as far as that is a real thing, all green energy, yeah, which is cool.
Yeah. So, and I mean, how long have we been using them? How long have I been using them? Like 5 years at least.
More than that, yeah, because I've probably been on for 5 years, and I got on FBU.
Yeah. Yeah. So they do. Yeah, they you can encrypt your inbox as well, but you forfeit some recovery perks. So, because, you know, it's like on your head be it type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I've been using them since 2018, so you've been using them at least that long.
So yeah, yeah, about 6-7 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, but. Secure ad-free. One of the things I also like about it, and actually I got my mum onto it, she really likes it, because one of the things that she was on Yahoo before, and every like 7 or 8 months or so they change the UI up, and
yeah.
That used to like really get stuck in her craw. I don't know why I keep using that expression. I don't even know if I'm using it right. And then there was the adverts, and they kept getting obnoxious and all this kind of stuff. And with Postio, it's like, it's so consistent. It's the same UI. You can use your Thunderbird or anything if you want. I just use the online interface, which is Round Cube, I think it is. But it's so low resources that it doesn't even fucking, you know. It's so consistent in how it looks. And they do. They throw in some new features from time to time. Also, what I use on my phone is I use their calendar and address book, and I sync it with my phone, so I don't have to sync it with Google. So
yeah. And I on you know, sort of the opposite end of the spectrum, I just use it with Mutt, and it works great with Mutt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can set all of the levels of security as you want it. So if you wanted two-factor, you could also, like, for a while, I blocked apps from using it. Like, you had to log in through the web interface. No apps whatsoever could use it. I took that off because then I put Thunderbird on my phone, which I actually really like Thunderbird as the email client on my phone. They've taken K9, which was what they sort of based it on. And they've tweaked.
It's not based on Thunderbird. It's
no. They
okay.
They so basically
the phone version of Thunderbird is a different code base.
Yeah, yeah, entirely. I think. So they basically I don't want to say bought out, but they adopted the K9 open source. I think the guy that did K9, the main guy, he just got offered a job at Thunderbird, and that was his thing. I think it's a like really kind of nice. How it all panned out, and yeah, it's a solid email client. I don't know what it does everything that I want it to do, so that's good. And and that uses Postio too, but yeah, the thing is, you've got all the levels of encryption that you want, so you can encrypt your inbox if you want. But if you don't encrypt your inbox, then if you accidentally delete all your messages or something, you can ask them to go into the archives and or recycle inbox and dig them out. But they do say, look, if you encrypt your inbox,
it's on you.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you can do all your own security stuff. So you can either have it super hardened, but then end up locking yourself out of your account, or you can just have something that's standard. And they've recently acquired Postio.com as well.
Oh.
But because used to, like, mine's a Postio.net.
I almost went with Postio.de, but I can't remember why I didn't actually. It's kind of cooler.
Yeah. I went .net because, it is a network, right? Like .net, that's you know, an email network. So, you know, it's .com is Postio is a dot company, but like what as my email as it represents to me, I don't know. Like .net seems logical for an email domain. So, There we go. All right, shall we wrap it up and play some Div 2?
Well, before we wrap up, I do. Mm-hmm. I just have to, because it's the best film I've seen for fucking years, mention Dinner in America.
Dinner in America.
Which is the best film I've seen in fucking years. It would have transitioned better if I'd mentioned it after we mentioned like punk stuff and appreciating punk aesthetics and whatever. Mm. It's a little indie film made by a dude who just makes little indie films. It was released during COVID, so it got no attention. It was only released in cinemas in the Netherlands, so I think it made something like $8,000 worldwide. at release. Really, and then it's a film that sort of people have become aware of over time. I think it got shared on TikTok a lot, little clips and that, which seems to be a good way to promote things that, you know. But it is, like I said, it's the best film I've seen for fucking years. It is the most heartwarming and sweet film I've seen for years. There's a bit about three quarters of the way through that makes me cry so hard that I'm still crying when the film ended. Actually, I was still crying 10 minutes after the film ended. I went for a piss while crying my eyes out.
Oh my God.
I cry easily at films, but yeah, it's the most sentimental, but like 20, 25 minutes in, you won't believe me. 25 minutes in, you've got to trust me and stick with it. It's a film that requires patience. It's a film that doesn't patronize its audience. The characters are not immediately likable necessarily. You've got to stick with it, and it will fucking reward you. It is. I don't want to describe it. I don't want to say anything about it. It's a reminder of how films should be made, how films should make you feel, rather than MCU slop. It's a film that stayed with me. I've watched it like four times now because I just fucking adore it. I implore you to go and watch Dinner in America. I've never bought a DVD or a Blu-ray in my life. I've not owned an optical drive for at least 15 years because I hate optical media, but I'm tempted to, and I'm fucking poor, but I'm tempted to buy a Blu-ray just to support this film and encourage the making of more films like this because it affected me so much. It's a reminder of what films used to be, and it's beautiful. Little CW, I hate fucking CWs, but little CW, near the beginning, a couple of times, there are racial and homophobic slurs. So if that's a red flag for you, then blah, blah, blah. But I would implore anybody to watch this film. It's beautiful.
Speaking of CWs, I was sorting through my legitimate film collection today, and... And I stumble upon, like I didn't know it was there. Cracked open a little bit of Human Centipede 3. That has all of the CWs that you like. If you can think of a CW, it's like apply it to Human Centipede 3. However, it still remains a very funny comedy if you are sick in the mind. Just
which it's, you are it's, weirdly your superficial sort of the way you are read superficially is very like quite calm, normy, not normy, but you know what I mean, like very placid, very gentle. But you definitely have this sick part of you. there's a darkness in there.
But like the acting, like. It's a film only the Dutch could have conceived of, to be honest, right? Skip to the third one. Like all three films are independent in their own way. And third is best, second is middle, and then the first one is just like it's the concept that stretched out for 90 minutes, really. Like the second one is just
some point. Get around to doing space versions about them.
Yeah, I think we'd have a horrible time.
Well, I'm sold.
I think if you can deal with the horrendousness of the third one, I think you'd enjoy the third one.
Yeah, I've got to be in the right mindset with my peculiarities, but yeah, I keep saying this, but I do very much want to do it. It's just a matter of being in the mood and the mindset at the same time.
Yeah, the first one you can watch on 2x speed. There's barely any dialogue in it, but I also it sort of reminded me in the third one that the guy that really sells the movie is not one of the main characters. He's the prison doctor. The third one takes place in a prison, and he has like his like he wears the white coat, and it's slightly ill fitting in a way that it looks like it was pulled out of a costume box. Like
you think
it's going to be a porno. Like you're just waiting for that moment. Like it's like he looks like a porno doctor. Like he's obviously not. And some of the and like he's such a bad actor that it's like I think it's like bad on purpose, because yeah, or I don't know. Like I don't know. Like it's just. But it's
that,
like
I've come out with the most heartwarming film I've seen for decades, and you've come out with fucking Human Centipede.
I know. It's awful. Oh, but like the doctor, he's like reading some medical documents and go, yes, these are medical documents I'm reading. Yes. Oh my God. I'm sorry. Don't, if you are not sick, don't watch Human Centipede 3. Just don't.
Don't do it to yourself.
It's racist. It's homophobic. It's, what other isms are there? Like, it's very misogynistic. All of the isms, really, all of them, like just like
completely
deplorable. Two thumbs up. Yeah, and what's quite funny about it is that all of the prisoners in this prison, they all have various ethnicities. Like there's like Jewish stereotypes, there's Muslim stereotypes, there's various different kind of like thuggy kind of stereotypes, as black stereotypes, and it's like Asian stereotypes. Like it's quite a multicultural prison. It's like
everyone gets stereotyped.
I genuinely think it's like, look, if we're racist against every single person everywhere, then we can't, then we're not racist, we're just evil.
Anyway, I'm going to stop you there, because otherwise you're going to be talking about Human Centipede for 3.
I know, I've got it. But anyway, watch us on PeerTube. Goodbye, YouTube. And
Goodbye, YouTube.
Yeah. And if you're watching this on the Fedi, thumbs up. Hooray.
Well done.
Great. All right. Fantastic.